The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the Life Sciences Awards headline. The Future of Life Sciences. Sheila McHale, former CEO of Ask Bio, takes home the Lifetime Achievement Award, and many others are honored. And in this Life Sciences Awards section, we'll read the Q&A column on Sheila McHale and then the rest of the winners. And here's a second headline that begins inside the Triangle Business Journal. Lifetime Achievement, Sheila McHale. After serving as CEO of Ask Bio, McHale has become a tireless advocate of women's health. Since I joined the company, I am most proud of empowering other women. Gerada's first employee is a woman I mentored through a community outreach. She was underutilized in her prior position, so I convinced her to join Gerada. She now leads business development. Gerada's chief scientific officer is a young woman who invented the technology, and another woman leads Gerada's production development process. Additionally, after my breast cancer diagnosis, I have become a strong advocate for women's health issues. What professional accomplishment in the past year stands out? Getting back up after bilateral breast cancer, which was untimely diagnosed, despite surgery, 66 radiation treatments, and PTSD, pushing forward with business and philanthropic interests. Advanced Gerada by building a team, scaling and automating production, raising around $10 million, completing tox and demonstrating stabilization and oral delivery of vaccines in dogs, through CCF, aided treatment of children with ultra-rare diseases, established BC Ruckus, working to ensure women have appropriate breast cancer screening. And actually, before reading the rest of the Q&A, I'm going to read the About McHale section on the winner of the Lifetime Achievement Award for the Life Sciences Awards edition. Company, M34 Incorporated, Gerada Thin Film Incorporated, Columbus Children's Foundation, and Breast Cancer Ruckus. Title, Co-Founder and CEO, M34 and Gerada. Co-Founder and Executive Director, CCF. Founder and Executive Director, BCR. Birthplace, Peru, Illinois. Education, BS, University of Illinois. JD, Northwestern University. MBA, University of Chicago. Age of firm, it's a startup, less than 1 year. Family, daughter Megan, first job, CPA for Arthur Anderson. What should the Triangle do to nurture an even more vibrant atmosphere for the life sciences community? Women comprise the majority of the workforce in North Carolina's life sciences sector. However, our state's legislature and medical systems are failing them on an essential component of their health care, breast cancer screening. Mammograms, including 3D, miss 50% of tumors in younger women, who are the majority of our workers. Additional screening, ultrasound, breast MRI, is needed to timely find cancer. Breast cancer found early is curable and is deadly if found late. Do you have a mentor? If so, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received from them? Jude Samulski has been my mentor, friend, and partner in multiple life sciences companies. He was the one who convinced me that I could be a CEO. Over 20 years ago, he gave me some feathers and told me that if I could just muster up the courage to spread my wings, I would fly. Having that support has allowed me to grow, fail, and get back up. The life sciences sector is going through hard times. What can be done to change this trajectory? Universities create great research, but to translate into the clinic, life sciences startups need more capital and a larger talent pool. We also need a legislature that supports our life sciences ecosystem by providing funds through loans and government grant matching, tax policies encouraging investment in early stage companies, enabling research intensive companies to deduct R&D costs, and equipping the North Carolina Biotech Center. And now we'll read the list of the rest of the winners. First, Best Consultant, Aisha Hassan, Partner, Barnes & Thornburg, LLP. Outstanding Research from Universities or Research Institutes, Jude Samulski, Co-Founder, Former President, and Chief Scientific Officer, Asklepios Biopharmaceutical, or AskBio. CEO of the Year, J.D. Mowry, President and CEO, KBI Biopharma. Best Consultant, Mike Townley, President and Co-Founder of Creo. Best Medical Device Company, Ascensus Surgical, founded in 2006. And Best Ag Bio Company, Harp Bio Herbicide. 4 years is the age of that firm. Best Early Stage Product Development Company, Gilero, a 22-year-old company. Company of the Year Private, Cryotherapeutics, a 5-year-old company. Company of the Year Public, Novo Nordisk, age of firm 101 years old, 31 years in North Carolina. Best Ag Bio Company, Traitology Incorporated, a 2-year-old firm. And we'll read more of those articles if there's time at the end. But for now, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Changes are coming rapidly at Dix Park. The evolution of Dorothea Dix Park has been slow and incremental since Riley agreed to pay the state $52 million for it in 2015, but that is changing rapidly as the promise of the park comes into view. Two significant projects, the Weld and Rockway Raleigh, are rising nearby. To Raleigh developer Brian Kane, it's a chance to spark the cool lifestyle neighborhood that you see in cities such as Nashville, Tennessee, and Austin, Texas, where formerly industrial areas have become hip urban centers. The Weld, led by Kane's SLI Capital and Mack Real Estate Group, is a $700 million project whose first phase includes two 20-story towers that will offer a combined 675 apartments plus ground floor retail. When you look at some other cities like Nashville and Austin and those kinds of places, we don't have as many of those dynamic projects as those cities have created, even though we have jobs and income data that is as good or better, Kane says. All the data would say we should be getting as much or more, but we don't seem to be. Kane expects the first phase of the Well to deliver in 2025. The second phase is still in the design phase, but will include a roughly 900,000 square foot tower with 525 residential units and then either a hotel or office. Dix Park already drew 950,000 in fiscal 2023, and its use is rising. Three renovated stone houses, one of which will be a new visitor center, will open in June. A new playground with water and sand features will open next spring. Eventually, 2,000 employees of the Department of Health and Human Services will transition to Blue Ridge Road once that new headquarters is completed. Having thousands more people living close by will, of course, drive more use. Not far from the Weld is Kane Realty's Rockway, where a 7-story building with 335 apartments and a rooftop terrace will welcome residents this summer. That first phase includes 18,000 square feet of retail space. Two more residential buildings will follow with a total of 550 apartments. Brian Kane says having a nearby project developed by his father, John, is only an advantage. We compare notes regularly on what's sensible and what's not, Brian Kane says, but I think fortunately in this case, they were out ahead of us in building a product that's different than what we're delivering. That's more luck than planned. UNC commencement is a hit at night. UNC Chapel Hill can be slow to change, and so moving commencement to Saturday night and not Mother's Day was a major change. UNC officials were light on reasons why to make the switch, but a surge in students staying up all Saturday night and then stumbling into commencement Sunday morning probably was one reason. Either way, the May 11 commencement was a huge success in most regards. While interim Chancellor Lee Roberts drew some boos and one student yelled, "Go back to Duke," the night overall was a success. Astronaut Zena Cardman was an entertaining speaker, and students jumped for joy when they tossed their caps and fireworks erupted across the stadium. It was a riveting moment at the end and a fitting finish for a class that lost its high school graduation and needed its shot of pomp and circumstance. Novavax pivots under pressure. Sometimes public pressure works. About a month ago, the Raleigh hedge fund Shaw Capital began calling for an urgent shakeup of the board of directors of the vaccine developer Novavax. The company was one of the major organizations working on a vaccine amid the pandemic, but it failed to gain traction, similar to vaccines developed by Pfizer and Moderna, leading to a major drop in its share price over the past few years. Shaw Capital, led by Himanshu Shah, criticized the company's strategy and has submitted public filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, urging shareholders to vote against the re-election of three Novavax directors at an upcoming stockholders' meeting. The activist position of Shah, one of Novavax's three largest shareholders, seems to have worked. Novavax on May 10 announced a licensing agreement with the pharma giant Sanofi worth more than $1 billion. The deal includes an upfront payment to Novavax of $500 million, with an additional $700 million tied to potential milestones. Heading to Pinehurst? Ditch your selfie stick. If you're planning to attend the U.S. Open Golf Championship next month, you better leave your selfie sticks at home. Like any sporting event, the U.S. Open has a list of prohibited items to bring into Pinehurst No. 2 from June 13 to June 16. Some of these items are par for the course. For example, event attendees can't bring weapons, regardless of permit, or outside food and beverage, except for non-glass water bottles, 32 ounces or less, or those for infant and medical needs. Less obvious items that attendees cannot bring in include signs, banners, posters, backpacks, and purses. They must be under 6x6x6 in width, diameter, and height, cameras, and selfie sticks. And finally, TBJ Publisher to take on new role. Jason Christie, the market president and publisher of Triangle Business Journal, is leaving the publication for a new role with the parent company. Christie has been named Senior Director of Enterprise Membership Sales, a new position that will work with outlets across American City Business Journals. He moves into the position after guiding TBJ to rising revenue and audience growth that was among the leaders in ACBJ. "I'm eager to leverage the success we've achieved in the Triangle region and replicate it across the country," Christie says. "The team at Triangle Business Journal made my job a great place to come to work each day, and I am deeply grateful for their ongoing efforts." Christie found a passion for the media business early when he started his career as a sports writer in Flint, Michigan. He eventually moved into advertising and marketing and landed at ACBJ in 2014 as the director of advertising for the Charlotte Business Journal. Christie came to the Triangle as publisher in 2015 and led a paper that already had a strong reputation to even further growth. TBJ has earned 6 Eagle Awards from corporate, which recognize the top outlets across the country. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. First, we have a story written by Kate Tracy. Altered State fills Omega Sports location at North Hills Mall, and that's spelled altered, A-L-T-A-R-apostrophe-D, all for Altered State. A women's fashion brand is opening its 4th location in the Triangle. Altered State, which sells clothing, accessories, and decor for women, is opening a new location in the North Hills Main District at 4120 Main at North Hill Street, number 145 in the Commons. The business is taking 9,000 square feet in the space previously occupied by Omega Sports, which closed all of its remaining stores in North Carolina last year. Its new next-door neighbors will be Witch Witch, Superior Sandwiches, and Sports Clips Haircuts. Altered State will be open for business next summer. The company signed its lease last month with Kane Realty Corporation, developer and manager of North Hills. Currently, North Hills' occupancy is at approximately 98% to 99%, according to Kane Realty. Stacy Busher, managing director of operations for Kane Realty, said Altered State should be a wonderful complement to our retail merchandising mix. They also do a phenomenal job in creating amazing spaces that further the retail experience while shopping, Busher said. The new shop will be joining its sister brand, a bridal store called Vowed, spelled V-O-W apostrophe D, which already has a store open nearby in North Hills. Altered State's other sister businesses include A.S. Revival, Tullaby, and Arula under the parent company Standout for Good Incorporated. According to its website, Altered State's founders started the company in 2009. In addition to its new North Hills location, Altered State also has local stores in Crabtree Valley Mall, Fenton and Cary, and the streets of South Point in Durham. Kane Realty has long been working on the redevelopment of the North Hills Main District. The development firm has gained a slew of new retail tenants, including the Mediterranean restaurant, Lamani Grill, in the One North Hills Tower office building, J. Crew, Madewell, True Food Kitchen, Village Tavern, and Mia's Bakery, according to previous reporting. Other new tenants at North Hills include Sweet Green, which signed a lease at 4158 Main at North Hills Street earlier this year. In addition, menswear shop Johnny O plans to open this summer. And Foxcroft Wine Company is opening at 4421 Six Forks Road in the Lassiter District. Hotels, Airbnbs in Clayton face new tax. Clayton passes occupancy tax to boost tourism revenue. This article is written by Ben Tobin. Clayton is establishing a new tax on hotels to boost revenues for tourism and marketing. The legislative body for the town of Clayton voted recently to establish a 2% occupancy tax for any business providing lodging and accommodations within the town's corporate limits. Impacted businesses include hotels, bed and breakfasts, Airbnbs, and VRBOs, among others. The tax will go into effect on August 1st and is in addition to a 3% occupancy tax already established for Johnston County. Patrick Pierce, Clayton's economic development director, said during the Clayton Town Council meeting that the move is based on room nights and is meant to bolster revenues for tourism in the town. This is a way for us to capture revenue from those folks coming to visit here and be able to market and roll back into having additional tourism marketing in our area, Pierce said. The revenues must be used for the direct benefit of Clayton. North Carolina municipalities are not allowed to levy an occupancy tax on short-term rentals in hotels without first obtaining permission from the state legislature. Clayton received such permission in October 2023 during the General Assembly's last session, according to Pierce. Pierce said that other municipalities around the county, such as Smithfield and Selma, are already implementing that additional 2% occupancy tax. Per Pierce, by law, two-thirds of the revenues must be spent on marketing, while the remaining one-third must be spent on tourism-related projects. This move comes at a time in which Clayton is booming. In 2010, the town of Clayton's population sat at 16,116 residents, according to estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. By 2022, that number had ballooned to 29,445, an increase of more than 82.7% over a 12-year period. Area primed for housing available at Johnston Harnett Line for $1.8 million. And this is also written by Ben Tobin. Land near the border of two of North Carolina's hottest counties is up for sale, and it could be prime land for a new residential subdivision. Real estate firm Cushman & Wakefield is looking to sell 44 acres of land at 1317 Ridge Road in the Johnston County side of Anger, near the border with Harnett County. Pharmaceutical manufacturer Mariel Select Incorporated acquired the land in 2002, per Johnston County deed records, and is seeking $1.8 million for it, or roughly $40,000 per acre. Brant Berry, a senior associate for Cushman & Wakefield who is working with the seller, says that the land is zoned for industrial use, but that land around it is zoned for agricultural residential use, and that future land use plans for Johnston County call for the parcel and area to be purposed for rural residential use. The sewer system for the land is septic. We're looking to just find somebody who's looking to ride the wave of development that you're seeing down there. Somebody who wants to build probably starter homes, three bed, two bath for commuters who can either commute into the Triangle or, if they want, to commute down to Fayetteville to take advantage of the economy down there, Barry says. Barry says the land has received a good amount of interest from national, regional, and state home builders and developers alike. He said he's hoping the land is under contract in the next 2 to 3 months. This is the latest potential housing development in Johnston County, whose cheap land and proximity to the core of the Research Triangle has led to an explosion of growth. The county has 241,955 residents as of July 1, 2023, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, a major increase from the 168,878 residents from 2010. And finally, ACRS implements M&A to grow. Raleigh Clinical Research Firm adds 9 sites with acquisition. This article is written by Zach Ezone. A clinical research firm headquartered in Raleigh has expanded its site network with a recent acquisition. American Clinical Research Services, or ACRS, has acquired Elixia, a clinical site organization with operations in multiple states. The deal, financial details of which were not disclosed, expands the ACRS clinical site network to 12 sites in 6 states. Latticework Capital Management, a Dallas private equity firm, formed ACRS in September 2022. Following its acquisition of Catalina Research Institute in Montclair, California, the firm later appointed Dustin Owen as the company's CEO. Owen previously spent nearly a decade with Wilmington's PPD, now part of Thermo Fisher Scientific. Over the past year, the company has focused on building out a leadership team and infrastructure to support its growth, Owen said. An ACRS goal is building a network of clinical research sites that can help pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies complete complex clinical studies. With its recent acquisition of Elixia, ACRS has added 9 sites to its network. The company's other sites include the Catalina Research Institute site and new sites in San Bernardino, California, and Dallas. The company is pursuing a two-pronged approach toward growth, acquiring sites and building out new sites, Owen said. Establishing its own sites allows ACRS to move into areas currently without research sites, which provides access to patients to clinical research and helps reach patient populations who may be typically underrepresented in clinical studies. Owen said he would like the company to be balanced in its approach to growth, with ACRS pursuing both the formation of new sites and the acquisition of existing sites. The acquisition of Elixia expands the geographic reach of ACRS to Florida, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Missouri. While a broader geographic spread is important in reaching diverse patient populations, the company is also excited about the therapeutic areas that Elixia is focused on. These sites focus on patients in nephrology, neuroscience, and infectious disease. Owen said ACRS plans to double down on the therapeutic areas in which it operates, which also includes metabolic diseases. These are therapeutic areas that are seeing investments on the side of pharma and biotech companies, with an increasing number of new drug candidates entering pipelines. ACRS works with companies across all phases of clinical trials from phase 1 through phase 4, and the drug developer it works with include large pharma and mature biotech companies. The company has 6 employees in the Triangle who are focused on the back office functions of ACRS. Owen said he would like to see the company eventually expand its footprint in North Carolina, not just in its corporate functions, but also its patient-facing operations. And now we turn to the reporter pages, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on tech and startups. NC State startup sells to Oregon firm. Beer to Bags was started by a 19-year-old university student. Beer to Bags, a Raleigh startup that uses breweries' throwaway malt bags and turns them into customized beer tote bags, has been acquired by custom tap manufacturer Hoptown Handles of Oregon. Financials were not disclosed. Emily Neville started Beer to Bags initially as Reborn Clothing as a 19-year-old sophomore at NC State University. I just had this passion for taking items that were discarded or had no use in the economy and making them into something that would be alive once more, she says. Reborn allowed her to combine it all to create new products, from upcycling off-brand uniforms for Delta Airlines to working with hundreds of universities recycling athletic jerseys and event t-shirts. And she was taking in materials from the public, making custom t-shirt quilts. By 2021, she was spread pretty thin. While there were outward signs of success with a team, a cut-and-sew facility, a materials warehouse, and at one point, a North Hills storefront, but Reborn was not profitable. There wasn't really a focus for scale and growth, Neville says. That's when Raleigh Brewing Company reached out. The beer maker was throwing away 200 malt bags a week. Could Reborn use them? Reborn took a major pivot and downsized, exiting its leases, including those for the cut-and-sew facility and the warehouse, in favor of an outside contract manufacturer that it still uses today. It reduced its staff, and it went all in on creating durable tote bags and other products from materials breweries were discarding, rebranding as Beer to Bags. The conversations with Hoptown Handles started in January. Neville realized the company was at yet another pivot point. In order to scale, it needed a bigger reseller. Hoptown Handles could be that reseller, and under its new parent company, Neville says the future is bright. Kombucha Company picks Wilmington for factory. A growing kombucha empire is creating more than 100 jobs in North Carolina by picking Wilmington over competing sites across the country, its CEO says. Fed Up Foods recently announced plans to expand its operations with a beverage manufacturing facility in Wilmington. CEO David Gray says the decision, more than a year in the making, is a major milestone for the Asheville company, which is considered the largest private label fermented beverage maker in North America. The company manufactures beverages for retailers' private labels, distributing at places such as Kroger Foods, Whole Foods, and Publix. It develops recipes for a slew of fermented drinks such as kombucha and prebiotic soda. Our ability to learn how to scale on a mega level, it's truly been a competitive advantage for us, Gray says. The company's site search started more than a year ago, with the firm casting a wide net before narrowing the list to sites in Colorado, Tennessee, and North Carolina. Wilmington had an advantage, a ready site in the former True Colors Brewing Building. The existing infrastructure met the company's criteria, and the proximity to the Port of Wilmington was another differentiator, particularly as Fed Up Foods works with a global supply chain, importing ingredients from South and Central America. Gaming company on verge of shutting down. 2 years after raising $15 million in outside capital, a video game company in Raleigh is laying off staff and evaluating its options. Lightforge Games, co-founded by Epic Games veteran Matt Shambari, appears to be closing up shop, possibly for good. This month, Shambari said development on the project was pausing, and the majority of Lightforge's staff would be laid off at the end of the month. On LinkedIn, Lightforge posted that, despite regular meetings with potential investors and game publishers, it was unable to secure the funding to complete its flagship game. The remaining skeleton team will regroup to see what a viable future for the studio may be, Shambari said on his personal LinkedIn account. And finally, massive wind turbines head to North Carolina. One by one, 242-foot-long wind turbine blades are heading to eastern North Carolina, where they'll be powering Google next year. The blades are starting to arrive at the port of Morehead City, where they're put on trucks for the Apex Clean Energy Project in Chowan County. Jimmy Merrick, director of development for Apex Clean Energy, the Virginia developer behind the project, estimates that 11 sets of blades have already arrived at a local shipyard, with more to come. On May 27, they'll head to the site outside of Edenton, where they will power Google's data center operations. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed. Verona Pharma cuts major financing deal. Raleigh Life Sciences outfit secures $650 million to prepare for growth. With a potential regulatory approval more than a month away, a biopharmaceutical company in Raleigh is boosting its coffers in a major way. Verona Pharma has entered financing agreements with Oak Tree Capital Management and Omers Life Sciences that provide the company with access to up to $650 million. The deals provide Verona with additional financial flexibility as it nears the potential commercial launch of its lead product candidate, ensifentrine, CEO David Zaccardelli said during an earnings call on May 9. Verona last year filed a new drug application with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration seeking the approval of ensifentrine for the maintenance treatment of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. The FDA is scheduled to make a decision on ensifentrine by June 26. If approved, the company expects ensifentrine to be the first novel inhaled mechanism available for the treatment of COPD in more than two decades, Zaccardelli said. Ensifentrine could be one of the biggest potential drug launches in 2024, according to a report from the pharmaceutical intelligence firm Evaluate Pharma, which estimates 2028 sales of the drug at $784 million, landing Verona at number 9 on the list of this year's most anticipated drug launches. Through its recent deals with Oak Tree and Omers, Verona is financing a previous $400 million debt facility to one with a lower overall cost of capital and favorable financial covenants. The company in December entered the previous debt facility with Oxford Finance and Hercules Capital. The new $400 million debt facility is made up of term loans available in five separate tranches, with the first $55 million becoming available at the closing of the deal. The remaining tranches, ranging from $70 million to $100 million, are available to Verona upon certain milestones or at the discretion of Oak Tree and Omers, according to a U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filing. In addition to the $400 million debt facility, Verona entered a revenue interest purchase and sale agreement with Oaktree that is worth up to $250 million. Through the revenue interest purchase and sale agreement, Verona will receive $100 million upon the FDA's approval of ensifentrine. The additional $150 million is tied to certain net sales milestones. NC State finalizes $29 million deal for University Towers on Hillsborough Street. NC State University has finalized a transaction to boost its student housing capacity. The university in early May completed a deal to acquire University Towers, a residence hall on Friendly Drive near Hillsborough Street, for about $29.3 million, according to Wake County Real Estate Records. The deal adds more than 900 beds to the university's student housing inventory. NC State acquired the building from University Towers Operating Partnership LP. This is an operating partnership that was previously a subsidiary of Education Realty Trust, which was acquired in 2018 by an affiliate of the global apartment giant Greystone Real Estate Partners. With the transaction complete, the university will shift its focus to renovating the property. In April, the University of North Carolina System Board of Governors authorized NC State to spend $25.4 million on the renovations. And finally, CEO of Project Kitty Hawk departs. A nonprofit backed by millions of dollars in state funding is looking for its next leader. Will Zemp stepped down in April as CEO of Project Kitty Hawk, with Andrew Kelly, the University of North Carolina System's executive vice president, named interim CEO. Zemp is leaving to help care for a close relative battling a serious medical condition, according to a letter signed by UNC System President Peter Hans and Randy Ramsey, chair of the Board of Governors. Hans and Ramsey also serve as chair and vice chair, respectively, of the Project Kitty Hawk Board of Directors. And now we turn to On Greater Triangle Growth, this page written by Ben Tobin. Window maker signals bigger footprint. Manufacturer behind $96 million JOCO plant sees expansion potential. The New York-based window and door manufacturer behind plans for a new factory in a growing North Carolina town sees big potential for future expansions. Crystal Window and Door Systems this month announced plans to invest $96 million to build a new manufacturing facility at the Eastfield Crossing Development in Selma in Johnston County. The company says the factory will create roughly 500 jobs with an average salary above $56,000. A spokesman for Crystal Window and Door Systems shared more details on what that initial investment will include, as well as future growth opportunities in the area. Bob Nyman, who was formerly vice president for sales and marketing at Crystal Window, says the company is planning to construct a 240,000 square foot factory on 42 acres. He says that the property in Selma still has to go through a due diligence period, and that the property should close sometime this summer. The facility we have in New York City is around 210,000 square feet, Nyman says. So that's kind of the model. And then subsequent to that, in Selma, there would be development of ancillary production facilities, probably in separate buildings or tacked on to that building. If everything goes according to plan, production should begin at the facility in late 2025 or early 2026, Nyman says. Founded in 1990 by Taiwanese immigrant Thomas Chen, Crystal Window and Door Systems has been expanding its reach in the United States. Last month, the company announced it would construct an advanced manufacturing facility and regional corporate headquarters in Texas, an investment totaling more than $121 million and 504 jobs. Nationwide, Crystal Window and Door Systems has roughly 750 employees, according to Nyman. He declines to share the company's revenue figures, but per industry magazine Window and Doors 2023 Top Manufacturers Report, Crystal Window and Door Systems made between $100 million and $200 million in the year prior to the report's publication in June 2023. Chatham Megasite has two companies. What about the other 1,300 acres? Wolfspeed, the semiconductor manufacturer building a $5 billion facility in Chatham County, now has a neighbor at one of the county's megasites. And if Michael Smith, president of the Chatham County Economic Development Corporation, gets his way, the 1,800-acre Chatham-Siler City Advanced Manufacturing, or CAM, site will soon have more tenants. A few weeks back, Innovative Construction Group, which was acquired by national home builder Pulte Group in 2020, announced it is investing roughly $40 million in operations in Siler City, which the company says will create 157 jobs over a five-year period. The company plans to build a 150,000-square-foot manufacturing facility at the megasite in Siler City. The plan is to have the plant operational in 2026, according to Smith. With Innovative Construction Group occupying 45 acres and Wolfspeed on 445 acres, the chip producer said it will create 1,800 jobs by 2030 with its materials factory. The CAM site still has 1,300 acres available, according to Smith. We're looking at a lot of advancement opportunities that are certainly both related to the electric vehicle market and the semiconductor market, Smith says. And then there are plenty of other opportunities for other markets. And finally, Yellowfin buys 82 acres in Johnston County. Dozens of acres in one of North Carolina's hottest counties recently sold for a major price. LLC Yellowfin Construction of Benson purchased roughly 82 acres off Raleigh Road in central Johnston County for $6.4 million last month, according to Johnston County deed records. The seller is Bradley Stancil, an active Triangle developer. A group tied to him, Pintail Development, purchased the land in September 2023 for $1.65 million. He says the buyer of the land is a national home builder, but declined to share the specific home builder. He says his group is developing the land for a 69-lot subdivision with home sale prices expected to start at $500,000. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Rising costs stall ATMA's second phase. Another big Triangle development on hold due to rising costs. Another large commercial real estate project in the Triangle is now on hold due to rising costs. Manish Atma, president of Atma Hotel Group, says the company is waiting a year before it moves forward on the second phase of its redevelopment of Tar Heel Lodging off Highway 501 in Chapel Hill near Rams Plaza Shopping Center. Atma cites higher interest rates, recent apartment openings in Chapel Hill, and rising construction and labor costs as reasons for the pause. The second phase is set to include about 283 apartments, about 10,000 square feet of office space, and three parking decks within the multifamily and office buildings. Atma says they had started the process of working with contractors last year when they chose to wait out the financial market. It just didn't make sense. Nothing pencils, Atma says. Interest rates and also cost for development has gotten out of hand, and that's concerning. So we're just holding out till at least 12 months before we do anything, because we don't expect interest rates to move much this year. Atma also says banks have tightened restrictions on their lending practices to multifamily projects. In the Tar Heel Lodging project, the apartments would be the first to be constructed in Phase 2, with studios, one and two bedrooms that will range from 600 to 1,300 square feet. The apartments will be in three five-story buildings. Two of the buildings will connect to a parking deck with about 300 spaces, while another building will have garage parking below it. Some of the amenities planned for are a fitness center, swimming pool, courtyard, and meeting space. The office component will be built after the apartments are complete. That's if the market lends itself to more office space. It would be a three-story building with a parking deck next to it. The multifamily and office project will be at 1740 Fordham Boulevard near the hotel the company developed in the first phase. The parcel is 3.65 acres and has a total assessed value of about $3.8 million. The True by Hilton Chapel Hill Hotel at 1742 Fordham Boulevard opened in 2022. The entire redevelopment includes two adjoining parcels that are the Jiffy Lube at 1746A Fordham Boulevard and the vacant lot between Jiffy Lube and the former Quality Inn. Atma Hotel Group is based in Chapel Hill. Its portfolio includes the Sheraton Chapel Hill, Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill, and several other hotels in the local area, as well as Charlotte. Apex site prepped for Greensboro developer. A Greensboro developer paid $13 million for land in Apex for a new apartment complex. Signature Property Group acquired 35.6 15 acres off Highway 64 near the Sweetwater Town Commons, according to Wake County deed records. Signature will develop a 392-unit apartment community called Elevate 64, one of multiple multifamily projects the company has in the Triangle. Elevate 64 will be on 25 acres, while the remaining 10 acres will be reserved for commercial development. Vice President of Development Craig Taylor says Signature will sell the acreage fronting Highway 64 to a commercial real estate developer. For the residential aspect, there will be 231 one-bedroom units and 161 two-bedroom units. The one-bedrooms will range from 775 to 1,090 square feet, while the two-bedrooms will be between 1,100 and 1,327 square feet. And finally, luxury student housing to have rooftop pool. Aging student housing near NC State University will be replaced by luxury student housing with a rooftop pool. Trinitas, that's spelled T-R-I-N-I-T-A-S, Trinitas Ventures of Indiana, filed site plans for Varsity Drive Apartments, a student housing project adjacent to Centennial Campus. Currently, the housing on site is only 30 units, while the new apartments will have 324 units available to NC State students. Linda Irving, Vice President and Project Executive at Trinitas, says the company anticipates housing 811 residents. There will be studios, 1, 2, 3, and 4-bedroom units in 1 7-story building. The apartments will be market rate and consistent with other Class A multifamily developments that open around the same time. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. Search for foster parents intensifies across the state. Finding foster parents is a rising need across North Carolina, according to a statewide nonprofit started by business leaders in 1902 to serve the state's children. About 250 people turned out April 25 for a luncheon at Northridge Country Club to support the Children's Home Society of North Carolina, which has its headquarters in Greensboro but has offices and services across the state. The nonprofit has an office on Six Forks Road in Raleigh and more than 40 staff members in the Triangle, but most of their work is done in the home, supporting families and finding options for children in need. CEO Brian Maness says a huge challenge is finding foster parents. It's one of the biggest challenges we face, he says. Since COVID, there has been a 20-25% decline in the number of foster parents. The Children's Home Society began as business leaders, including Benjamin Duke of the Duke University Benefactors, sought ways to find ways to help children, including orphans. Now the programs focus on strengthening families in crisis as well as finding homes for children in need. CHS served about 22,000 North Carolina children last year and completed roughly 250 adoptions. The organization has a budget of about $35 million, with two-thirds of that coming from government sources and the rest coming from philanthropic sources. Maness says the society gets about 10 calls a day for children who need care, a number that has remained consistent even though the number of families available has declined. There are not families for them, Maness says. We're doing a lot trying to respond to that. Raleigh Rescue Mission launches project in Knightdale. A new Raleigh Rescue Mission project in Knightdale will serve up to 350 women and children needing homes. The innovative project, called The Garden, will be surrounded by a Lennar Homes-built community. The project will include family suites, a child learning center, a dining hall, gathering spaces, counseling centers, a salon, an outdoor park, and a community garden. The goal is to help families transition back into a more supportive environment. So far, the effort has raised more than $20 million from foundations and donors. It is looking to raise another $5 million. The Raleigh Rescue Mission unveiled the project April 22nd, with Knightdale Mayor Jessica Day and other dignitaries in attendance. Activate Good has a new leader. Rose Thompson, who had served as Senior Programs Manager, became Executive Director of Activate Good as of May 1. The nonprofit, which dates to 2005, looks to inspire people to jump into a wide variety of volunteer opportunities. She replaces longtime leader and founder Amber Smith, who is moving on to other opportunities. Commercial project opens in Southeast Raleigh. Beacon Point, a 43,000-square-foot commercial and retail complex in southeast Raleigh, officially opened April 26. Beacon Point complements the YMCA, Beacon Ridge Apartments, and an elementary school in a project that brings together commercial, wellness, housing, and wellness opportunities. The goal has been intentional investment in a part of Raleigh that has been historically underserved. Our promise and our vision for Southeast Raleigh is that our history and culture is acknowledged and celebrated. Structural barriers are removed, and it's a place where all residents have access and pathways to success and prosperity, said Yvette Holmes, the CEO of Southeast Raleigh Promise. This project will help ensure that Southeast Raleigh residents have access to the opportunity to grow and to thrive. Self-Help Ventures Fund, a nonprofit sponsor, was selected by the YMCA of the Triangle to develop the capstone Beacon Point with a mix of commercial uses that complement the neighborhood's broader plan. And finally, Dick's Conservancy names Ross new chair. Raleigh attorney Bill Ross has been named the new chair of the Dix Park Conservancy. He follows Orange Quarles, who has led the board since 2021. It's a joy and a privilege to have the opportunity to work on this unique park with its stunning natural beauty and rich, compelling history, Ross says. There's no place like it in America. Ross served as Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources from 2001 to 2009. He is now of counsel at the Brooks Pierce Law Firm in Raleigh. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. Rising debt levels spell danger for consumers. An ominous report landed in my email on May 14. The Federal Reserve of New York's Household Debt and Credit Report for the first quarter. Here are the basics. Household debt in the U.S. climbed to $17.79 trillion, a record in this century. Nearly 9% of credit card balances and 8% of auto loans annualized transitioned into delinquency. Mortgage balance inched up to $12.44 trillion, almost a $200 billion increase. And balances on home equity lines of credit, or HELOCs, increased by $16 billion to $376 billion. There are many other touch points in the Fed survey, but for discussion's sake, let's focus on these factors. To me, the sustained inflationary pressures on consumers from food prices, gas prices, auto sales, auto repairs, insurance rates, and many other services are beginning to chip away at the wealth created by rising home values. But the same consumers are trying to figure out how to stay financially afloat despite the wage increase across most income levels. Perhaps rightfully, the consumer is trying to draw down on their credit card balances, which in the past 2 years have seen exorbitant interest rates tied to credit cards that carry balances. The Fed report notes credit card balances declined, falling by $14 billion to $1.12 trillion. However, the Fed notes that a drop in credit card balances is expected during the first quarter. As you can see from the second bullet point that was mentioned, consumers are beginning to make choices regarding their top priorities and what bills need to be paid first. If more and more auto loans slip into the repossession category because of delinquency, it is safe to assume the American consumer is in trouble. For the most part, consumers tend to get emotionally attached to their automobiles. The financial struggle is real if they let their auto loans go delinquent. Another Fed report noted that about 121,000 consumers had a bankruptcy notation added to their credit reports last quarter, and approximately 4.8% of consumers held some debt in third-party collections. Meanwhile, the nation's personal savings rate has been falling fast. It was 3.2% in March, down from 7.9% in September 2021. It had reached record levels at the height of the pandemic. The steep drop means individuals and households have less in their reserve accounts to turn to when trying to pay down debt. As I mentioned before, the lack of available credit for the American consumer will hit every door as debt and delinquency levels across all spending categories keep going north. For bankers, the old joke about living the 363 life, bring in new deposits at 3%, make loans at 6%, and be on the golf course by 3 p.m., may not happen for a while. The debt burden numbers are beginning to change dramatically with every passing month as the Fed holds interest rates at elevated levels. For other businesses, especially consumer-facing businesses such as retail and bars and restaurants, we need to start looking for the average price tag for a restaurant goer and an average receipt for a shopper. If the trend is fewer dollars per tab, we will know the stress is beginning to take effect. For business-to-business entities, the impact cycle may be stretched out. While companies are still posting robust earnings, the tension below will be worth noting and planning for. I hope I am wrong about all of this. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout. The first big number, 9,200. That's how many potential new jobs are represented by the 75 new project inquiries Michael Haley, Executive Director for Wake County Economic Development, says his team has received since the start of its fiscal year in October. $14.5 million. That's how much Avicenna Biosciences has raised between its formation in 2020 and its recent emergence from stealth. The next big number is 1998, the year that the Rockin' Comet Diner, which was recently demolished by a new owner, came online in the town of Clayton. $81 million. That's how much the Alta Vale Apartments in Northwest Raleigh sold for to Mid-America Apartments of Tennessee, according to Wake County deed records. And now we'll read the quotable sections that are also sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is Robert Claypool, CEO of Bioventus, on the company's recent improvements. Claypool joined the public medical technology company in January, taking over for an interim CEO who replaced the company's previous chief executive, who left days after a major $450 million acquisition collapsed. We are improving our fundamentals every single day in many areas, ranging from better sales operations to enhance our customer experience to a more disciplined supply chain and inventory management to support our growth. Next, we have Patrick Pierce, Clayton's Economic Development Director, on the town passing an additional 2% occupancy tax. This is a way for us to capture revenue from those folks coming to visit here and roll it back into having additional tourism marketing in our area. Sam Cater, Chief Economist at Freddie Mac. Many potential sellers remain hesitant to list their home in part with lower mortgage rates from years prior, adversely impacting supply and keeping housing prices elevated. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read the guest column. This is written by Sally Hodges-Koppel, who is a public policy analyst with the NC Budget and Tax Center in Raleigh. The headline, Do We Have the Revenue We Need? Each year, the North Carolina Office of State Budget Management, or OSBM, and the Fiscal Research Division, or FRD, release a consensus revenue forecast that projects how much tax revenue the state can expect to collect. The forecast represents an agreement, that's the consensus part, between the legislative and executive branches about how much money the state has to work with in creating a balanced budget. This year's forecast was released last month, and most headlines will focus on the fact that North Carolina is projected to collect $1.4 billion more than expected over fiscal years 2024 and 2025. Far from a cause for celebration, though, the forecast is a sobering reminder of the consequences of legislative leaders' relentless pursuit of tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy. Revenue collections that fall short of current needs and a trajectory that calls into question the state's future ability to fund the public institutions that help our communities thrive. Before we allow legislative leaders to crow about this forecast, we should be clear that the additional anticipated revenue won't come close to covering unpaid bills, meeting current obligations, and covering the backlog of needs in North Carolina communities. The unexpected funds in just this current fiscal year won't cover the amount that is past due to the state's public education system as part of the Leandro case. According to court rulings, the state still owes $678 million to fund two previous years, fiscal years 2022 and 2023, of the eight-year Leandro plan and uphold its constitutional obligation to provide a sound basic education to North Carolina children. Legislative leaders also passed policies last year that they have yet to fully fund. For example, there is a $300 million gap in the state's flawed private school voucher program. Last year, the legislature made the program universal by expanding eligibility to families of any income level and any school enrollment history, including millionaires whose children never attended public school. The looming crisis in North Carolina's child care system also underscores that an ongoing commitment, not modest over collections, will be required to meet long neglected needs. The child care system faces an impending fiscal cliff this summer due to the loss of federal pandemic era funding. While the drastic needs of the system should be immediately met with these additional tax dollars, we know that structural issues make child care in our state an unsustainable business model. A lasting solution will require not only this down payment, but a sustained investment to finance a system that delivers quality care in every county with living wages for educators. Policy that caters to the wealthy few instead of addressing the multiple crises facing regular North Carolinians is the wrong way to go. Instead of paying for private school for millionaires, public funds could meet the systemic needs of our communities, supporting healthy pregnancies and child development, preserving and expanding affordable housing, protecting our state's environmental resources, and so much more. The revenue forecast shows that we can choose to make a recurring commitment to the well-being of families and communities. The revenue forecast should prompt policymakers to pause planned tax cuts and proceed with caution rather than congratulate themselves on modest over-collections. As lawmakers return to Raleigh to consider adjustments to the state budget, North Carolinians should be demanding a course correction. It's time for our tax and budget policy to respond to the needs of regular North Carolina communities, not the pocketbooks of the rich and corporations. And with our remaining seconds, we'll read the beginning of the 52 Shades of Success article. Duke's day has come. Manny Diaz primed to lead the Duke University football program from good to great. Story by Connie Gentry. Not many Division I football coaches will tell you they volunteered their way into the coaching profession, but Manny Diaz, who took over in December as the 23rd coach to lead the Duke University football team, is quick to highlight the valuable perspectives he gleaned from that rather unorthodox beginning. It was almost like the old coming through the mailroom story. I was fortunate to start my career at Florida State on a volunteer basis just to get myself in the building, recounts Diaz, who adds he wasn't good enough to play college football at FSU, but he'd set his sights on attending a school of that caliber. Whether it's coaching, football, or another line of work, if you're eager and you'll do small jobs well, people start giving you bigger jobs. The more you do those jobs well, the jobs continue to increase, and I was blessed to work among some phenomenal coaches and people at Florida State, so that's where it all started. And we'll stop right there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.